Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of the Leaders in Supply Chain podcast. I am your host, Rado Palamariu, Managing Director of Elkett Global, and it is my pleasure and delight to have with us today Roberto Canevari, Executive Vice President and Chief Supply Chain Officer of the Estée Lauder Companies. Roberto is a professional, is an expert in supply chain, has done a multitude of roles across various facets of the function of the profession, several industries, several continents. So, great pleasure to have you, Roberto, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Rado. Ciao to you and you all, and thank you. Thank you for having me.
So maybe let's start first and foremost, Roberto. How did you end up in supply chain, right? So it's very few people in this world that dream of being a supply chain expert when they're 5-year-olds, right? So how was it for you? How did you end up in supply chain?
Well, not as early as 5 years old, but quite early. It just when I started my university, I started it as studying engineering, and I was in the aerospace. So I thought that was a passion that I was having. But after like a couple of years, I saw some of the program around the supply chain. And I thought they were interesting. And I thought that aerospace was very, you know, specialized, that this was opening more doors. So I don't know, I was just chatting with different people, professors, and I took the chance to say, look, seems interesting, seems very extended. And I started to do the second part of my degree, a lot more oriented into supply chain. And that was just the beginning. Then after that, I joined Nestle. I had a fantastic experience with my first boss. There was a person that was the head of supply chain of a division, and he was great. So not only I was kind of liking what I was studying, what I studied, and then I could see how to implement it or to utilize in the company. But then I also had a great boss. It was great in showing me the opportunity of an extended supply chain or an integrated chain, as he was calling it at that time. And then I thought it was great. So I started with that, and then it was just the beginning. And then the more I do it, the more I love the profession. I am absolutely passionate about our profession. And I had a couple of times the opportunity to change and do another experience, which I did in sales. Which I thought it's a great experience for a supply chain professional. So if you learn the commercial business and then you come back, it's a fantastic experience. You improve a lot as a supply chain person. But I was coming back. I just thought it was a great experience, but my passion is more in running the operations.
So Love it. And then I also love the point that you made, and I will emphasize it. It's something that came across again and again also in the book that we put out, right, from Source to Sold, is the fact that if you have that multitude of experience, whether it is also in some sort of sales roles, P&L role, running a business role, and then you come back or you complete your supply chain experience, it just makes you a much more well-rounded leader. And it also helps with the understanding, because ultimately you as the chief supply chain officer, right, you're a business partner to the CEO. It helps understand their perspective and it helps complement that perspective. So I think it's love that point.
I think, Radu, if I can elaborate on that, I think for a passionate supply chain person, we always need to remember one thing. Supply chain, so we are business leaders. Supply chain is business. I cannot stand when I hear supply chain defined in multiple ways, but never business. There is supply chain and the business. Supply chain is the business. It's a component of the business. You said it is the business partner of the CEO. So we're business people. So the more we do experience and focusing on one piece of the business that is called supply chain, which is, by the way, quite extended. So it's how do we make sure that we shape our career knowing the business very well? And so whether you do an experience in whichever functions, a commercial experience is great because then you really understand how to read the business, and then you become, by definition, a better supply chain expert.
Yeah, I love it. And one of the best analogies when I started, I'm not from supply chain, I think I told you so. I mean, when I stumbled across this 10, 15 years ago, and one of the best definitions that I got when I was trying to understand it is that supply chain is the nervous system of the organization, is that the thing that makes it all move. Without it, you basically become paralyzed.
Yeah.
And I really love that, and I really believe that.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think it's a great analogy of the nervous system. because is the nervous system is what makes you react instantly to whatever happens, and it's covering your entire body. So that's how you are basically reading, sensing what is going on, and then reacting with your total machine. So I think it's a great analogy, the nervous system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now shifting a little bit, Roberto, so we spoke a little bit before this podcast, everybody talks actually about resilience, right? And the last 2 years, the focus has shifted for all supply chains from maybe cost optimization, whatever it might have been, to, you know, how can I make sure that I'm resilient? How can I make sure that, you know, I don't end up relying on just one source of my goods and so on? But as always, there's a high element of resilience that is linked to technology. There's less discussion of resilience linked to people. And I like the fact that you wanted to discuss, and, you know, I'm looking forward to this discussion on how do you see resilience, but more in the context of putting a lot of emphasis on people, culture, change management. So let's open it up to that direction.
Yeah, it's a great point, Radu. And to me, I mean, clearly there is a lot that we're doing, I think, as like everybody, around how do we ensure, or how do we continue to evolve a supply chain that is a resilient supply chain. Maybe just before going to people, one comment on that. What I think, we always spoke about resilience in different maybe ways or with different level of priorities, but it's always been there. I think the big shift, at least in my experience, the big change that I have seen, given what is happening, what has been going on around us for a while now and will continue, is that I'm looking at resilience as almost like a lens, which is the lens we use now to read what is going on in our supply chain, to look at what is going on in our supply chain. So, and then we magnify, using this lens, we magnify what is more relevant to create more resilience. And maybe we give less priority on what is less relevant to create more resilience. So it's not something new, but I think it's something that what is new is that we're now looking at every single operation and every single area and say, is this resilient? And if not, what do I need to do? A lot more than before, where it was basically risk management, if you want, here and there, but not a 360 approach to. And in the 360, one of the most important aspects of resilience to me is people resilience, which is two things. One, how do I help our teams? How do I help myself and our teams, both as teams and individuals, to be resilient? And because, you know, we're tired, there is a lot of fatigue in the different organizations. So we have been saying it's another extra mile and let's do another extra mile. And it's, you know, we've been hoping a few times that things were getting better and then they're not, or there are other things happening and things are still very challenging. So the fatigue, if you want, of doing another extra mile, and then the extra mile are becoming, I don't know how many extra miles. So, and then you stop talking about extra miles. You're just saying, well, that's what it is. So we need to manage the situation as it is. It means, do we help people to be resilient themselves? How do we become resilient ourselves? And how do we create team dynamics so that we become resilient as team dynamics? And you know, when you talk about team, to me, the key for that means, how do I keep the energy very high in a very authentic way? And to keep the energy high, I mean, I am full of energy every day if I feel part of something, if I feel I am taken care of, if I feel I am trusted, if I feel I can learn, if I feel what I'm doing, you know, is based on real values that I share, and not values because somebody told me the values, values because I see behaviors every day. I have energy if I feel that what I want to do is aligned with what this company, the team I am in, want to do, if I'm listened, but really, really. So how do we develop all those ingredients, I think, to make sure that if I'm tired, somebody will help me, and it's I don't have any problem to recognize. I don't need to prove myself every day. I need to improve myself every day. So those are all conditions around that create a lot more resilience. And if I do it, and if it's really widespread, then we can count on teams. I'm using your analogy that then are really, let's say, passionate, energized, empowered, committed. And then it means I multiply my opportunities, because in running a global team, there are so many things that are visible very quickly to a team somewhere on the ground that if I wait that they come to the center, whatever you want to call it, well, we will be very slow. We will certainly not be resilient. If we empower teams to really go and take actions, because they know the framework, they know the strategy, they know what, so we take time to explain and then they are empowered. And, you know, if there is a mistake, we celebrate the mistake. We just learn from that. If you create this environment, this is way more important than a lot of technologies creating resilience. I mean, technologies are important. I look at technology, process, and people. The first two are clearly important to create resilience, but the third one to me is a multiplier. Whatever you do on the first and the second, the third one is a multiplier. And if you multiply by 1 point something or 2 point something or 3 point something, it becomes big. If you multiply by 0 point something, whatever you've done, it becomes smaller. And that's how I see people. That's why I am very passionate about the people, the energy, the passion, this aspect of how do you create winning teams.
Yeah, no, I am so thrilled that you wanted us to discuss from this angle, because I strongly observed over the many, many conferences, I'm sure you have as well, right? Whenever we go to one of those conferences, 90% of the time is spent on technology. And I actually did a post recently on that. And I said, look, why are we doing this? Why do you spend 90% of the time on technology when ultimately technology can be copied or can be bought? You can buy, you can go to the same provider to buy your digital twin or to buy your IBP solution or to buy. I mean, ultimately, it's not, the differentiator is not there. Nobody has the technology that is so unique and proprietary that nobody else can use, right? So why are we not spending more time on, and I didn't think from this perspective, the multiplier, which is a really good analogy, right? The multiplier aspect, which is the people, because ultimately, if the people and if the change management in any transformation is done well, which is again, backed on the people, then you will succeed, or of course not. You won't succeed even if you have the best AI, machine learning, whatever piece of technology you may have. So love that you're making the point. And just to bring it home, maybe, and to make it concrete, Roberto, can you think of some examples? And I liked also how you said that, look, let's empower the local teams to make the decision and let's not wait for a corporate direction to come, which might, you know, take 2 years before they formalize the ultimate solution, right? So do you have some example in Estée Lauder in the last 12, 18 months, perhaps, where you have seen this in action, where you empowered this in action?
Well, there are many, because the beauty of the multiplier is that you can see examples every day if you really, in a very genuine way, you push the concept, and that, which means you are present with the people, you are talking to people, you are listening a lot. If you do those things, you see it every day. In my last few days, you were mentioning IBP. I have been traveling around actually the two continents in the last 10 days, and one of the reasons was IBP is a big, big priority. Bigger priority for sure, like for everybody, I think, but it's a big focus area for us for multiple reasons. And I have been in 3-4 different countries, and you see that the rules of the game, if you want, and what we need to do overall, it's clear there is a very strong playbook. We are doing quite a lot of it, but we can improve quite a lot as well. But then I go and see what is going on in a country versus another country, and there are different needs, different specific actions that needs to be taken, because maybe, you know, statistical forecast is more challenging to be implemented in one area because of the team that you have there versus it's a lot easier in another area. And we all need to go at the same speed of the playbook, if you want, wasting opportunities. If I trust the person that tells me in that specific country, this is more challenging. Here it's more challenging statistical forecast because of the way our teams have been organized, have been working in the past. So I need to do more actions here and less actions in other place. That's fine. Who cares? I mean, it's as long as we are aligned on the outcome and you give complete authority and accountability to the teams, wherever they are, to act, then they go fast. They, you know, you increase the speed. But there is a beautiful book that I read many years ago, The Speed of Trust. You know, if you go, then you have the speed of trust, but you need to give trust. And if, you know, there is a mistake, this is where the test, then this is where you say, okay, you've done this and you were doing less here, but this was a mistake. What have we learned? And move on. At the moment of the mistake, then you start questioning too much the decision, and then you basically destroy the credibility of it. So it's really now a key opportunity for resilience is visibility. We need to create visibility. And with the visibility, then we need to be very agile in shifting, changing, adapting. And if you don't have a transport management system, and it takes a lot of time to see something to sort of, as a control tower, but especially to also change and use different solutions, different provider in critical moment in which when you need it, you need to react immediately. If in that moment you don't have it, it's a big, big lack of resilience. How do we know and how do we take control that in every area, in every aspect, in every logistic network we have well fully covered? And how do I, if I want to know everything centrally, this will be a very challenging picture. If I just trust the team, and one team was actually telling me a few days ago, this is where we are, and this is what we need. And I said, just go. Don't wait for any major global solution. Just go, do it, implement it, because we will increase a lot. And I trust them to take the right decision, and then we will do a step. Then whether this will be replaced by a bigger, wide global solution, fantastic, even better. But the point to me is, how do you accelerate decision-making process? Because you empower people on the ground that they see the reality and they can react super fast. As long as you give them a framework, I think then it's fantastic. So there are several examples.
Love it. This reminds me of an example. And it was a very large oil storage company. So they have these big reservoirs, right, where you put different types of gasoline and oil and whatever, right, chemicals. And obviously, when you store, I don't know, a ton, 2 tons, I'm not the expert, I mean, but it's worth basically millions of dollars. And one of the engineers, right, at some point missed the valves, right? So he basically, unfortunately, he put one type of the product into the reservoir, and for which was actually meant for another part. And that cost the company, I don't know, $7 million. And was talking at that point, this was, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, we were doing an intervention with the CEO who was trying to instill new values in the organization, and one of which was entrepreneurship. And the other one was constant learning. And he was telling me that what he did at that time, he said, okay, look, this is a very expensive, you know, a very expensive mistake. However, let's take the learning out of it. How can we improve? How can we make sure this doesn't happen again? And then one of his managers said, okay, so what are we going to do with the person that made the mistake? You know, are you going to fire him? And then the CEO said, fire him. I just invested $7 million in his training. How am I going to fire him? Why should I fire him? So I love that as an analogy, right? Because it's a different way of thinking. Of course, you know, there's very costly mistakes, and it's not to say that we should make them. But if it's in that spirit and there was no ill intent, right, and there was no, sometimes it does happen, you can make the best out of it and also create an example for the organization that it is okay to make mistakes, learn and move on, continue, take action, fail fast and act again, because that keeps the ball rolling.
Well, actually, I completely agree, Radu. And let me tell you, if we have time, I'll tell you 2 quick stories. I promise it will be quick, or 2 quick examples of that. Because I at the end, this is critical. This is the central point. Otherwise, if you are not allowing that to happen, not because you say it, or not because you do it when things are going so well that it's easy to say, oh, you know, we celebrate mistake, we're great, we do this, we do that. And when things are actually going super well, the real test is when you have a big problem like that one. And in that moment, you really react in this way. So 2 stories. One, actually, a colleague that is working with me today, is in our team. He said something, which is our global head of manufacturing. He said something in a meeting that I appreciated a lot, and I'm using it multiple times. He said, look, at the end of the day, with his team, he said, look, at the end of the day, we never lose. We either win or learn. And when you use this attitude with people to say, look, don't worry about losing. It's either we win or we are learning. Then you immediately move the focus from I am concerned because I might do a mistake, or I have done a mistake, and how do I show that it's not entirely my mistake, or it's not a big mistake? So you use the energy to discuss the mistake, or you use the energy future-oriented to solve it. And if you say we never lose, we win or learn, immediately the focus is on future. So, okay, what do we do? Whatever happened, fine, let's learn, but what's on, so that we use our energy to just make it better. And this is energy. This is real energy. You see, this is the best way to give resilience, because then you see people crazily energized in, actually, I want to see the problem. If there is a small problem, I'm not trying to, let's say, I'm not saying covering it, but I want to aggressively discuss the problem because I know I will have people helping me to solve it. Not I have people questioning me why I have the problem. Or somebody, a coach that I had many years ago in Italy, a fantastic guy, taught me something that this is not mine. I think it comes from him, but I am using it as if it was mine because I like it so much. He said, look, Roberto, you always have two things when you are running a team, et cetera, et cetera. The approach of the window and the mirror. And he said, you can see around yourself mirrors and windows, and make sure that you have only few mirrors and many windows. I said, what does that mean? And he said, look, in a mirror, what you see is you see yourself and you see behind yourself. So you need some mirrors to learn, to understand what is environment around you, look at and learn from the past if you want, and see if yourself, if you are okay, meaning skilled enough to do it. So you need some mirrors, but you need many more windows around you, because windows are, you're not looking at yourself, but you're looking at the others, and you're not looking behind, you're looking in front of you. So it's future looking. And I thought to me, and every day, honestly, almost every day, I have example in my mind when I'm doing work, and I say, look, I need to have only one window, one mirror here and three windows, because that's how we're solving this problem, this situation. Then you put all your focus and energy on future. Great achievement. How do we multiply? Really challenging problem. How do we learn and move? It's just energy creator. Those are two examples that I use that I can really see almost every day.
Love it. And I want to talk about something specifically because, okay, incidentally, before today, right, yesterday, we met and I was in your office, right, in London. And something that I liked and I observed in the interaction with your teams, right, it was a very light, you know, there was a lot of humor. There was just a sense of ease, right, which you can feel. And we are headhunters by part-time or half or full-time, I don't know anymore. But so I always, as a professional trait, right, as a headhunter, I always make it a point to go into the company that I'm recruiting for, and we are recruiting for, where is our partner, right, in charge, just to, you can feel when you enter, how's the atmosphere, right? There's some companies which is very tight and dense, and, you know, it's like, okay, everybody is quiet. And there's others where, you know, like when we walked into yours yesterday, you know, there's a lot of energy, and then, you know, people talking and laughing and joking, and you can sense it's there at ease, right? So I wanted to, and I'm formulating my question as I speak. So I mean, for me personally, for example, is also very important, the sense of humor and a sense of fun, which I feel that a lot of companies completely disregard or forget, or leaders that completely get so serious or put on this facade, right, that I am an executive, so I need to be in a certain way. I need to behave in a certain way, and I need to be damn serious because otherwise this doesn't work, right? Which I think is so wrong. And it's so, you know, it's actually counterproductive, right? So I just wanted to ask, how do you see these things? I mean, you've been in leadership positions for many, many years, and how do you see this piece of very subtle culture?
Oh, but first of all, thanks, because it makes me happy what you said, because this is really the way I like to work. So the fact that you have seen it very quickly, I mean, I take it as a big compliment for our teams, and so that, thanks a lot. I cannot be more aligned with you on this one. Totally agree. I think to me the point there is, and you know, you can have fun, you can be serious, you can, as long as you are yourself. To me, the point is, how do you create an environment where, you know, this sense of being in an environment where it's easy to have fun, joke, or to do whatever you feel in that moment you want to do? That, to me, comes from creating very authentic relations. And to me, that's the base of when we talk about diversity and inclusion, and there is so much that at the end of the day really goes down, in my opinion at least, goes down to, I know I am in a place because it has been created by all of us, because we all play an important role at whichever level of leadership we are. We all play an important role, but of course some of the people have more responsibility, so they even need to do it. They're even more responsible if they do it well or not, but how do we all create an environment where I can just be myself? Again, I don't need to come and prove that I am a serious person and I, you know, I have the authority and this and this. If I am not a serious person and I feel I am a lot more extrovert and fun and I like joke, whatever, that's me. I can do. If I am personally a serious person and I like to behave in a certain way because that's the authentic me, that's fine as well. To me, the point is, how do I create an, do we all create an environment where I can really be myself? I can really use all my energy, not to create a different version of myself and making sure that I read the environment and I do this and this and that. I use all my energy for the windows, which means for the others, which means future looking, to find the solutions, to create better performances. It's a competition with others, but not with my colleagues who does the biggest career. It's a competition with our competitors outside. The moment of truth is when the consumer is picking one product or the other product. That's the competition. How do I do every day? How do I use all my energy for that instead of for something else? Then you create an environment which is, you know, it's very easy because you feel like you can do yourself. You learn, there is a lot of empowerment, there is a lot of trust, there's a lot of care. There's a lot of, maybe I exaggerate, there is a lot of love around, but I'm saying love on purpose to say, you feel like, then you want to be back in the office because you feel like, yes, you're at home, but I also want to be there with my colleagues because I feel this environment, I feel the energy. That to me becomes a competitive advantage because this you cannot copy. You said it before, the technology, I can see I have a fantastic planning tool and the other one doesn't have it. Well, it will take 6 months, then they see it and they can implement the same. That's not, these you will not see it. And this to me is really the multiplier. So very happy that you have seen some of that yesterday, Radu, essentially.
Love it. Just a couple of questions. So specifically on the recruitment, since again, my personal trait. Oh. So when you look at hiring people, Roberto, what do you look for? So I'm not talking necessarily hard skills. I mean, I'm not talking at all hard skills, actually. What do you look for at the soft skills fundamental level?
The most important one is, there are two important. One, is this person helping to create diversity? Is this somebody who brings a different point of view for whichever reason of diversity? I am extrovert. And another one is introvert. Fantastic. I come from an experience that this is my life and this is my experience. Somebody has a very different one. So whichever diversity trait, but I think that to me is another important element because you enrich the team. If you really use these different frame of references, then you enrich the team. If you have the same frame of reference, well, it's difficult to significantly improve. That's the first key element I want to mention. And the second one is very low level of ego. I think a big level of ego for me is a problem for leaders. And a big level of ego means between you and the team, you might put yourself ahead of the team. And that to me is a challenge. So when I see big egos, a big ambition, I love it. Big ambition, I'm very happy. Big egos, that's really a warning sign for me. That's something that I really look at it and say, this is really an input, a strong, strong input I need to consider. All the others that I mentioned are elements that will enrich, you know, the profile. This is the hard skills and then related to the company culture, good or aligned or not aligned. And what does it mean? Maybe even better if it's aligned or even better if it's not aligned, depending on the condition. What kind of different experience profile diversity that this person brings, and those are all elements that are like you put it in the mix and then you basically mix them up and take a decision. The big ego, it's probably an element where I don't then put it in the mix. I say, no, that's really preventing the team dynamics and the team development that I'm doing. There is no single individual that can have some fantastic art skills that are bigger than the team. Yeah. Sorry, a long answer. I don't know if I answer your point, but it's that to me is
really no. And I mean, it's something that I believe so strongly as well. And I've seen it. And I mean, at any given time, the superstar sales or superstar headhunter, superstar lawyer, superstar supply chain expert, right, ultimately cannot and will not do better than a team. And the team is always above the individual. So love that you drilled that point down. Could not agree more. And I think that's an issue in many organizations where they eventually end up tolerating toxic, bad, high egos, right? Because they tend to be very, very good at what they do, very good performance. Ultimately, it always ends up in a lose situation because you destroy something that is much more valuable, which is the team dynamics. So yeah. Love it. Final question from me, Roberto. So from your experience, what would be some top advice that you would give to somebody that's just starting up in supply chain that has helped you the most in your career?
Let me think, two or three. Well, certainly one is learning attitude. We never finish learning. So just be very present, I think. Be very present. So, and you know, we have tough days and great days, whatever happens around us. But you make sure that you are always very present and very curious, and you keep on, you have the attitude of, I want to learn. It's not really, I want to grow. I am very ambitious. So which is my next step? The next step will come. As long as you keep on learning, then the next step will come. And you might be lucky in a moment that will come sooner and less lucky that will come later. But don't be too worried about speed in terms of I need to go much faster and I need another 6 months. Why? Just learn. Make sure that you are learning and you are becoming richer and richer in your experience. That to me is a great piece of advice that I received. And I'm using it. So I'm keeping on being curious and listen so that you learn. The second one is, it goes back to the ego. Learn that it's a team sport. It is absolutely a team sport. So if you are a passionate of team sport, you know, if you are not a passionate of team sport, well, learn it. But it's a team sport. So make sure that you always put your ego second to the team. Your ambition, that's fine, everybody knows, but your ego second to the team. And the third one is, how can I say, it's stay true to your values. Stay true to your values. Don't try to change too much yourself. Keep on improving yourself, yes, but stay true to your values. And if you see something that feels very aligned with what you are doing and you want to do, that's great. If you feel that something is not, then watch out. I mean, there's you cannot play a role, you need to play yourself. So if you do those three things, you might have some challenging moments. And of course, I mean, you have to read a little bit. But if you do those three things, my experience is then not only you are growing, you learn, people see that, and people see the real version of yourself. So you will grow also in areas that you like. Because if I don't see the real version of yourself, you might grow in areas that you like less. And then this becomes an even bigger problem. So not only you give yourself space in the areas that you like, but normally you become better because your level of energy will be higher if you do that versus if you're in a place where you are less passionate about. So do that and you will see it happens. And second, you will just feel better yourself. I mean, at least me personally, that's what happened to myself. I just feel better that I think I am doing what I like, what I learn. And I'm trying to do it with values that are aligned with the person I want to be. So if you do those things, your energy will be higher. If your energy will be higher, your performance will be higher. And if your performance will be higher, you will continue to grow in the direction you like. Sorry, a very optimistic view of the reality, but I really believe in what I said.
I'm with you. I'm convinced this is the way. I mean, it always takes effort to be who we are not. It just takes effort to put up a facade, to put up some sort of, to pretend that we're something we're not. It always takes energy away from us, whereas being who we are is just the natural way. It's as simplistic and as obvious as it sounds. It is true. And unfortunately, still many of us don't do it, right? And of course, there's also, it comes with age or wisdom or some sort of, you know, self-acceptance and all of that. And we don't have time necessarily now to dwell into it, but I could not agree more. So Roberto, this has been fascinating. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for so many good stories and good sharings and keeping it real. what to wish you? Well, first and foremost, I wish you that AC Milano wins the Scudetto, right? So that you
put... I really hope so.
So that's one, and two, keep being a great leader, keep inspiring people, and keep up the great work at Estée Lauder. And thanks a lot for the time and joining us today.
Thanks to you, Rado. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you like what you heard, be sure to go to www.elcottglobal.com and click the podcast button for all the show notes of the interview. Also, subscribe to our mailing list to get our latest updates first. If you're listening through a streaming platform like iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, we would appreciate a kind review. 5-star works best to keep us going and our production team happy. And of course, share it with your friends. I'm most active on LinkedIn, so do feel free to follow me. And if you have any suggestions on what to do and who to invite next, don't hesitate to drop me a note. And if you're looking to hire top executives in supply chain or transform your business, of course, contact us as well to find out how we can help.